Hi, this is Millie, and welcome to the Escaping Narcissistic Mothers podcast, where you'll find the validation and love you've been looking for. I can help you navigate the difficult waters of going no contact. Please follow me on Instagram at Escaping Narcissistic Mothers, all one word. Hi, everybody. I hope you're having a good day and a good week. And we're already towards the end of June. I'm recording this on June 19th and uploading probably soon thereafter, I hope. I want to once again apologize for the length of time between podcasts. I want to do at least one a week. I don't know if I'll be able to do that, but I'm going to aim for that, okay? My life has gotten busier since the beginning of June. And that's what's kind of preventing me from doing as many podcasts. Life gets complicated sometimes, and it gets, let me just put it this way, in a good way, complicated in a good way, and I'm busy, so it's not as easy for me to just sit and make these podcasts. But you know that I do this for you, okay? At first, I did it for me. I'm not going to lie about that. Years ago when I started this podcast, something like 3.5 years ago or four, I did it for me. But I'm doing it for you. If you go back, you will see my first podcast is sometime in 2020, but I lost 60 podcasts moving from one platform to another. So I have 60 more that are gone, that disappeared. And actually, those were good because they were very, very raw. They were me crying. They were me, how I felt at that time. And I'm sorry that they're gone. Because it's for some of you, that would have been perfect to hear that part of me. You know, that moment when I was first just coming to realize that my mother was a narcissist and the feelings that were there. Okay. So moving forward, this particular podcast is for those of you that have both parents that are toxic. Okay. So it could be two narcissists, a narcissist and an enabler. So this would be for those of you that had most likely two parents that stayed married. Because in that, if the enabler, the father, right, in most of our cases, the father stayed in the marriage, they had to appease your mother in order to survive themselves. And that is not to make you feel bad for them, because they were an adult. They chose your mother and they chose to stay with your mother. And everything that they did, they're responsible for. Okay. And that's what we have to remember, is that narcissism is not a mental illness per se. It is a personality disorder. This is something that they do, that they're very clear that they're doing. They may not know it's called narcissism, right? And they would fight you tooth and nail. Don't ever call a narcissist. Because believe me, you can't convince them of that. You can't convince them that the sky is blue, all right? Believe me, that's my ex. I mean, he would argue everything that I said, including the sky is blue. No, it's orange. Okay, whatever. I mean, he didn't actually say that, but he would argue everything. So you can't, it's not a mental illness, because I've had this discussion with people, and I'm saying this from a lot of research. And I always go back to that. No, I'm not a therapist, you know? And you listen to my podcast and you take from it what you want, what you can. If you relate to me, wonderful, you know? But I've learned from therapists, from real therapists. You know, I have watched and listened to Dr. Romani and Chris Godinez. These are real therapists. I mean, Dr. Romani is famous, but Chris Godinez, who is, her focus is narcissism. She's on YouTube. And she has a podcast too. And I'll put her name in the description. I always do that. I always link people with her because she's so good. And a lot of what I say comes directly from what I've learned from her. I've read 20 books on narcissism and narcissism-like books, you know, topics. So it's not a mental illness. It's not like having schizophrenia, right? Because a lot of you may think, because you're good people, this is why. Because you're a good person, you think to yourself, my mom can't help herself because she's sick. That's not the case. It's not cancer and it's not schizophrenia, which needs a lot of treatment, you know, medication. You can't treat schizophrenia with therapy. Their condition is a personality disorder, okay? That's a different thing. When they do something, they know what they're doing. They're scheming and they know it's wrong. They're aware of that, but they will never admit it to you. And that's the confusing part. Like, you can say to them, how could you do this, and be specific, and they'll never admit it. Okay. So that's why, you know, I was branded for a little while by you. And by you, I mean, you guys that listen to my podcast or follow me on Instagram as the no contact person. I am the person who went no contact. I realize that no contact is not for everyone. But the truth of the matter is, you cannot win with a narcissist. Being near or around a narcissist is putting yourself in there and being at their mercy. So regardless, the best way to handle a narcissist is no contact. I know I'm contradicting myself here, but it is. And you can look this up and you will see that it says it everywhere on the internet, on YouTube. People who are therapists, they are going to tell you the same thing. No contact is the best way because a narcissist will hoover you back by saying what they think you want to hear. But if you're very careful about listening or reading what they're saying, you'll see that they're actually not saying what you think they're saying. If they apologize for something and say, "I'm sorry you felt that way," that's not an apology, okay? An apology is, "I'm sorry I behaved." Be specific in the action and then say, "I am going to do my best," because we can't promise we're going to change. We can make another mistake. We're human, right? "I will do my best to not do that again." Okay? And then you do your best to not do that again. But that's not what they say. But they put things like, "We love you. We miss you. You know, we had this party and you were missed." So they're saying what they think you want to hear to get you back. And then when you go, "Oh my God," you know, they play on your guilt. And then when you go back, they start their antics again. Okay? All right, so what I said was that this was going to be a podcast for people who have two toxic parents, whatever the two toxicities are. And I'm doing it because I have begun doing EMDR. So EMDR, for those of you that don't know what it is, stands for eye movement desensitization. I can't say the word. I know how to spell it, and I can't say desensitization. Reprocessing. Okay, so eye movement, the D word, reprocessing. I'm not going to try it. I'm very good at pronouncing words. I can't pronounce that word. There's too many S's in there and a Z. Okay, so the process is very different because I had heard of EMDR. If any of you watched the Showtime show, The Affair, they show EMDR training, like therapists being trained in EMDR. And that's not exactly how it is, okay? It is a process where you have to dig very, very deep into yourself. And if you have a good practitioner therapist like I do, she makes you get to the bottom of the actual feeling that you had at a specific moment, traumatic moment in your life. And that's not an easy thing to do. Okay, let me tell you right now, you can sit there, I can prove it to you. Think of a moment in your life. It does not have to be a trauma moment. I don't want to trigger a trauma for you, but just maybe an uncomfortable moment, like an embarrassing moment. And don't relate it to your parents. Just a general moment where you were embarrassed, something like that. Go back to that moment in your mind. Picture it. Pause this for a minute. After I'm done, pause this, and because I want you to try. And then try to figure out what feelings come up when you're in the moment. So you have to really be back there. And what are you feeling? Okay. Pause. Okay. So I bet you anything, if you just did that, that you came up with, I was embarrassed. I wish I would have said something differently. But you didn't come up with the root feeling that was under all of that. Okay. That is what EMDR is about. It's about getting to the root feeling, the real feeling, and then reprocessing that. And the EMD, my therapist is honest. She goes, I don't know how it works. The person who came up with this doesn't know how it works, but it works, right? So something in your brain happens when you actually do the EMDR, which is that the process itself is very repetitive. But your brain is going to do some wacky stuff, I'll tell you that much. I am in awe of it. I've had 2 EMDR sessions. The second one I wasn't able to finish. So really, I've done 1.5 sessions. And 3 sessions with the therapist, because the first one was about what I wanted to get out of it. And I actually went in there because I have work phobia, and I've talked about this before, and I want to process the work phobia. It has taken a turn that, I mean, I guess I should have known it was going to take the turn it did, right into my parents, right? It did. It went right into my parents because everything has to do with my mother and my father, okay? So it's very difficult, but I'm going to tell you what I finally have come to understand about myself that I didn't really, really understand until I did EMDR, okay? I have felt my entire life like nothing I did was right or good enough, or that everything I did was bad, that I was a bad girl, And I'm not talking about now. I'm talking about growing up until I got divorced. I was a bad girl. Everything I did was wrong. There was guilt attached to everything I did. And I had to dig really, really deep to see the connection. And I haven't even told her that. So she might be listening to this at some point. That I realized the connection between everything in my life. And not feeling like what I do is right. But feeling like what I do is wrong. And always having a guilt attached to what I do. That is the root cause of everything. So I recommend EMDR for you guys. If you are struggling with something, if your trauma is there, please find an EMDR practitioner. If you are in Florida, and I have one listener that is local to me, I hope she's listening. Contact me, please, if you're interested. Because EMDR is almost like magic. But it's a hard process. I'm not going to lie. All right. So let's talk a little bit about having both parents be toxic. I have talked about my mother at infinitum, forever and ever and ever on this podcast. My mother this, my mother that, my mother this, my mother that. She did this, she did that. Well, my mother is dead. My mother died September of 2021. And she's not the strongest part of my trauma anymore. Yes, she did what she did. She's behind my father's behavior in a way. But I also understand that my father is his own person. He makes his own choices. He made his own choices. And I've said this before. This is not new. But now I understand it on another level. Because of understanding what he did to me. And how that just reinforced what my mother did, right? He's the one that's alive who decided after my mother died. If you've been listening to my podcast, you know this. When my mother died, I tried to contact him several times. I called him 3 days in a row after she died, and he was very cold to me. He didn't want to talk to me. He even told me that my cousin was coming over when it wasn't true, because I talked to my cousin's son. Please don't try to figure this out. Don't worry about it. My cousin's son, who's my age, and he would tell me my dad's here, you know. So it wasn't even true. He just didn't want to talk to me. I wrote him a letter at the beginning of 2022. And that was it. All right. Now, there are flying monkeys who have been trying to guilt me into being in contact with my father. And the thing is, with a flying monkey, you just can't reason with them either. Because what, even if you tell them, what do you want me to do? He doesn't want me to talk to him. He doesn't want it. She told me, she agreed that he didn't want that. Then why the heck are you asking me to get in touch with him? Because you know that he won't? That's not my problem. I tried. He rejected me. I'm not going to keep trying. Now, I've taken my power back. I took my power back about 3 weeks ago, where I wrote a letter. And I burned it. Okay? I took my power back 100%. It is no longer his choice. He can now contact me or try, because I finally blocked him from my phone. And I will not respond. I am now no contact with my father officially. I'm making that choice. Okay? So, I had to bring up something very painful for me that I have talked about on here, but not often, not like other things I've talked about many times. You guys know about the day that my life changed, because it was the day that made me have to look at my parents and their dysfunction, which was, I'm 48, so this was 6 years ago. I can't believe it's been 6 years already. I got a phone call. To make a long story short, I was raised an only child, was told my parents only married each other, and it took my mother 9 years to get pregnant. And none of that's true. My dad was married twice before, and my mother was married once before. And my dad had three sons that he had abandoned when they were children. And one of them called me to tell me that they all existed, okay? Now, the three of them, one is from marriage one, and the other two are from the second marriage. So, two are full siblings. One is, well, he's an only child. He's not an only child. He has a half-sister from his mother's side. So, he has two half-sisters, me being the other one. At that point, my life changed because everything I knew was a lie. Everything, right? Everything I knew from before I was born. And what happened there was a lot of people are like, well, that's in the past. You have to forget about it. It's in the past. Chronologically, it happened in the 1960s, right? And 1970s, early 70s. But to me, since I didn't know about it, this is the part that's easy to understand, and yet they could not. I did not know that they existed. They were my brothers. Okay? I had a right to know. And it just happened to me in April of 2000, what was it? 6 years ago, whatever that year that was, 2017. That's a big year for me. I should have known better, right? I should have been right there. maybe it's a good sign that I didn't know immediately it was 2017. Maybe the EMDR is actually kind of cutting cords, even though I haven't talked about this yet, really. So that's what changed my life, that situation. And I had to look at my mother, and I had to admit that all the things I had read online about narcissistic mothers was true about my mother. And I still gave my dad a pass, even though the three brothers are on his sons. I still gave my dad a pass. Why? Because it's very difficult for us being humans and wanting to be loved and wanting to have at least one parent be the good parent. We want to at least have one good parent. I didn't. That's the thing. And I can say that now. I didn't have one good parent. I had a very manipulative, controlling mother and a father with no spinal cord that just followed in her footsteps and helped to abuse me. So he always took her side, even though I knew, or I thought he knew the truth, right? So what came up in the EMDR, and I knew I would have to deal with this because this is a big deal. And my father, if he had done what he intended to do, I could have called the police, but I wouldn't have. I was 18. I told her 19 because I thought it was 19, but I was remembering it the wrong year, the wrong summer. I was 18. And I don't know. I'm trying to cut it down in my head. I don't want to make the story too long. My parents had a trailer in the Catskills. They went every weekend, and I didn't want to go anymore. So the only thing they had to communicate was a public phone, a payphone, and so they would tell me at 10 o'clock at night that they would call, right? My mother would call me at 10 from the payphone. So I had gone out. It was Saturday night. Now, mind you, I realized that her calling me at 10 o'clock at night when I was 18 years old was unnecessary. The only reason that they should have called me was because something happened. There was no reason to check up on me at 10 o'clock at night. I know what she was doing. She wanted to make sure I wasn't having sex. That's what she was doing. Like, sex is only allowed at night. That was her thinking. I guarantee you that that was her thinking. Boy, is she wrong about that, right? Okay, so anyhow, she called me, and I got home maybe a minute after they called. I didn't know that right away. You know, when I got home, I was waiting, and when 15 minutes passed, I knew, oh, crap, I'm in trouble. They're going to come back. See, I was 18 and thinking, I'm in trouble. So they got home Sunday, and I'm in the kitchen, and I'm arguing with my mother because she was accusing me of bringing a boy back and having sex with him. And I went to the movies with a friend of mine that I didn't have that those kind of feelings for. I didn't even, he begged me to come in because he wanted to use the bathroom. And I was like, no, I'm sorry, you're not coming in. I didn't let him come into the apartment, you know? So I am defending myself and telling her that's not what happened. We said goodbye at the door, and that was the end of it. And you called me 2 minutes before I got home, because I got home at 10. Maybe a few minutes before. And she's fighting with me, and she continued to fight. I don't remember exactly, but she continued to accuse me, and I continued to defend myself. I remember looking at my father, and he's getting red, because that's what happens when he gets mad. He got red, and I still think back, and I see his face getting distorted, right? Like, weird. And he made his hands, he put his hands together like he was going to choke me, right? So both of his hands in the shape of my neck. Right? There's no other way to do it. And he lunged towards me. And I can't remember if I just sat there or if I moved back. If I put my hands up. I don't remember. My mother was the one that got in the way. And the only suspicion I have is, oh my God, if he does this, he's going to go to jail. Right? Or maybe she just didn't have time to think. I can't assume anything. I don't know why she got in the way, but she did. I don't think he would have gone as far as killing me, but he might have choked me. I might have ended up in the hospital. He was that angry. He walked away. I went into my room. And trying to figure out the feelings that I felt at that moment was very hard. Because what did I feel at that moment? I realized one thing, that I was in kind of confused and thinking to myself, what's going on? Like, what? You know, that was part of it, but that's not really a feeling. That's more of a thought. But when I went into my bedroom and I was alone, that's where I could, I was able to figure out the feeling, and the feeling that I had throughout my whole life, which was, I'm a bad person. I can't do anything right. So I guess I have to work on this a little bit more, because it's still very present and active, right? It's still triggering. But I saw how this tied into so many things. I don't feel comfortable talking about some other things anymore. And that, I think, is a good thing. I'm learning that I don't have to tell everything, tell my whole story. One of the issues I used to have when I had a new job, since that happened, since I found out about my brothers and I want no contact with my mother. And that's not the reason I want no contact. I just want to be clear. It was something else. She did something that, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. But it was pretty heinous what she did. And it happened to be just like 5 months after. But it's not necessarily because of my brothers. It was my brothers was the reason for me to investigate the narcissism thing and figuring that whole thing out, which is really traumatic too. I forgot where I was going with that. Oh, that everything I ever did in my life that was supposed to be enjoyable, instead of it being enjoyable, it became filled with guilt and regret, and I couldn't enjoy the moment because I was just thinking about the consequences that I would have with my mother, which I was right about, you know? I did have severe consequences. And the fact that I don't have to tell everything, like what I was saying before, I used to get, I got a few jobs after that didn't last, but I would just like start the job and vomit out my entire story. And I've learned that I don't have to do that. I don't have to tell people my story. It makes them uncomfortable, number one. If people can like me or not like me, and that's okay, right? And that's how you have to think too. I know the biggest thing with a lot of you is the smear campaign, right? And I know it's hard. I know it's hard. Okay, believe me. You know, you go no contact or you tell someone, my mother did this to me, and they don't believe you, or they go right into your mother used to say this about you. You start to hear the smear campaign. Or I mean, they've probably been smearing you for a lot longer than you know, but you know, you hear the new things that she's been saying since you kind of rang the bell, as I call it. Ringing the bell means, you know, you told everybody or you told someone, so she knows that you're on to her. Is that people are so concerned, right? I get so many comments about this on my Instagram. Like, what do I do? How do I stop her from telling everyone at church that I'm this and I'm that? How do I stop her from telling my family? You can't, okay? You cannot stop your mother or father from doing anything. You're not in control of them. Your life is going to become so much more peaceful when you get to that place where you know it is not my problem to stop them from talking about me. Any person who believes their lies is not my person, not my tribe. All right? So if you have a friend and your mother said something negative about you to that friend and that friend believed it, she's not your friend, okay? So it takes years to heal from this smear campaign. And the hardest thing is to get to the place where you no longer care what anyone thinks. And that's where I am. And I've been here for a while. I had to because my mom purposely was sending flying monkeys out to tell me the things that she was saying about me, to hurt me. I mean, I had a phone call in December, and I've said this before, with my cousin's ex-girlfriend, and she was about to tell me, it was weird that your mother, and I said, can you please not tell me what my mother said? There's no point in me knowing. And she tried again. And I said, that's where I cut the conversation off. And that's my advice to you. If someone is telling you the smear campaign, what your mother or father was saying about you to other people, and you tell them not to, and they continue to try, you cut them off right there. You just hang up. You don't have to say anything. You say, I have to go. I'm going somewhere. Click. I actually did. I wasn't even lying because it was Christmas Eve. Because narcissists, my cousin, tend to do things. And I'm telling you, he told her to call me that day. Guaranteed. Okay? He thinks he's smart. I'm two steps ahead of him. Okay, I've learned that much that if something happens, even if I can't be prepared for everything, and I'm not gonna spend my life preparing for everything, but I can immediately tell when it's him, right? I got a phone call. I was wondering when the heck this would happen because things in my life have changed a bit, and they know psychically. I don't know how they do, but they do. They're like, oh, Millie might be doing something good for her. And immediately the hoovering starts. Or gas. They try to do things to make you think you're insane, right? Or so I get a phone call from Buffalo, New York. And yes, I know they're wrong numbers, but that's what people told me before my mother died or my husband. Because of, you know, logic would say most likely a number you don't recognize calling you, that's a wrong number. I have two different spam blockers on my phone. If a phone call's getting through, it's because it's not a spam number that has been reported. Okay? Believe me, those are the only numbers that get through. So I get a phone call from Buffalo, and I was like, that's weird, Buffalo. And I didn't think anything of it. I couldn't at the moment. And when I got home, I said, oh, I know who it is. My cousin had a very good friend who lives in Buffalo. He's been trying to get to me through other family members, right? And I told you guys he went all the way to Cuba. To our cousin in Cuba and did something to gaslight me my head cannot process that, right? So we have to learn not to care what other people think, no matter who they are. And if they believe the narcissist or if they believe the smear campaign, then they're not your person. They're their person. Let them stay with them. Okay? I was actually telling my therapist, I was telling her that my mother made a very weird story about how I found out about my brothers. My brother called me. He Googled the number and found me. Okay, that's how easy it was. I changed my number. You can't find this number for some reason anywhere. I'm so happy. But he called me and it was that simple. It was that simple. He called me. Period. End of story. He called me. My mother was telling a story about, it's so weird and unhinged and people believed it. He said that my brother, who I had not met and didn't know about, that his wife, who didn't know anything about this either, had been to a nail salon with my ex-sister-in-law's aunt. Try to follow this. Two people who couldn't be further apart in life, okay? They both live in the same county in Florida, but how they would be in the same nail salon is beyond understanding. The only person who didn't believe her was my ex-mother-in-law because she knows. She's like, that didn't happen. I'm like, I know it didn't happen. I'll tell you how it happened. He called me, you know. But my own aunt believed my mother's story, even though my mother ended up in a mental institution for 2 weeks because she was having delusions and hallucinations, right? So the moral of the story is this. If a person chooses to believe the the crazy story above the truth, which is really simple to believe, then obviously that person's not on your side. My aunt not being on my side, not a surprise. I have really never liked her. Growing up, I didn't like her. She was the type of person, she is the queen of the narcissists in the family right now. I think my grandmother might have been the head narcissist, but she passed away when I was 18. And then my aunt became the queen. My mother is merely a servant of the queen. But my aunt, she's good. She is good. She cries alligator tears. If any of you don't know that expression, it's, you know, she would fake feeling bad for someone for something and there were no tears. Me and my cousin, not the cousin I've been mentioning, his son, me and him are the same age, we would laugh and we were children because we'd be like, where are the tears? Where are the tears? My mother didn't even like her. But that's another story. All right, so I haven't really talked that much about my father. Except the fact that I have come to the acceptance of who he truly is. That my mother died and that time is passing and whatever the heck is going on in his life, which is not good. And I can guarantee you, he set up his life so no one would care about him. Okay, yesterday was Father's Day and I assume, who the heck is going to call him knowing that his only daughter, the only daughter he had contact with once or the longest, is not talking to him? Who's going to call him to wish him a happy Father's Day? Right? He doesn't deserve to be told happy Father's Day. He abandoned three sons. He's a horrible father. He is the type of person who just thinks that it's okay to turn your back. Literally turn your back on, sorry, I am looking at the time and it's tiny on my phone here to see how long the podcast is, to literally turn your back on children, okay, and not have contact with them. And then with me, he did the same thing. He just did it later. But some time has passed now. It's been a year and a half since she died. More than that, it's been almost 2 years, right? September's right around the corner. We only have, 3 months till September? It's almost 2 years, and the reason that people are telling me, just one person, because the other people, I have not allowed to talk to me, and that's why no contact's important. You want to keep the people that are going to hurt you or persuade you or try to guilt you into doing something you shouldn't do out of your life. You cannot talk to them. But the person who did and was like, you need to forgive him. Why do I have to forgive him? He has never wanted forgiveness. Right? Yes, I do need to forgive him. I do. But not forgive, forget, and bring him back into my life. I need to forgive him so I can move on emotionally. And that's it. It has nothing to do with him, right? My forgiveness is not, would not be for, so that he could come back in my life. Or I could go into his and then, I don't know. I really don't know. We don't have a relationship. We never did. That's part of the story. Is that after I turned 12, he stopped talking to me. He barely spoke to me. He was just a ghost. You know, the only times he spoke to me was either to yell at me for something, tell me something, being ironic about things, about how my life was a mess when he had abandoned three kids. I'm always going to go back to that. Oh, yeah, my life is a mess. You abandoned three kids. It's just the topic was related. Let's just put it that way. And so there is no relationship there. There is none. It was me hoping that there would be one. But there isn't one to begin with. So me not talking to my father is not, I'm not losing anything, is what I'm trying to say. I'm not losing anything. Because it was never there. The relationship didn't exist before. So it would be trying to start a relationship with my father in my late 40s. And he's in his 80s. Right? His birthday's coming up too. In his 80s. And how can I, right? That's the thing. How can I start a relationship with a man who where I could say to him, you used to leave me alone with her knowing that she was going to abuse me. Things I don't remember that happened in the past, in my childhood. You had two jobs my entire life. And then when you only had one, it was the afternoon. So when I was coming home from work, you were going off to work. And you would have come home after I was already in bed. Okay? That was the reason that I had no relationship. But then they retired in 2004. I moved down to Florida. And I would visit them all the time because we live in the same goddamn city. Excuse my language. I don't mean to curse. I'm just, you know, animated about this. We lived in the same city. We still do. And he still wasn't my father. He wasn't around. He would go right out to the backyard of the garage. Right? The only time that I saw him stand up for me was after I got separated from my ex and my ex was visibly doing things to me, like whispering in my ear, and then he started screaming at me, and my dad got really mad, just like the day he was going to choke me, and he defended him. So I grabbed him in that situation. I grabbed him because I was afraid he was going to punch him in the face. I grabbed him. We were going to do something specific, that the water heater had broken. I was going to go to Lowe's and meet a friend of mine who was a plumber at Lowe's. And I grabbed him by the arm and said, forget about this and let's go. And I got in, I guess we got in our respective cars because I left from Lowe's and left. Because I had already met David, so I was going to meet up with David, my husband. That was the only time I remember my dad standing up for me was against my ex. And still was not on my side when we got divorced. There you go. The ironies of my father. So, yeah, I'm no longer interested in a relationship with my father. I'm not. Everyone in the world could be deployed, like the person in Buffalo, New York, and I know who it is, because when I got home, it was like a ton of bricks. It was like, oh, I know who this is. My cousin's friend who lives there. He's trying every person that he can to get to me. He doesn't get that I am not going to talk to anybody. I am never talking to anyone again. I learned my last lesson this past December. So not that long ago was the last time that I was going to talk to anybody. Because they're all going to tell me the same thing. My guess is that my father is very lonely. And he keeps calling my cousin. And my cousin's like, I don't want to deal with this. This is her problem, right? Oh, yeah, it's my problem. You took over that problem. You wanted to be, you know, oh, the hero? Continue being the hero, right? Because that's what my cousin did. He kind of, well, you know what? I don't know. I'm not going to say what I don't know is true. It was a thinking. And then I happened to try and go see my father in the beginning of last year before I wrote the letter with my daughter. And I didn't see my father. I saw my cousin. That's a funny story, but I'm not going to tell it now. So my assumption wasn't that he was around a lot during that time, but I know my cousin. My cousin is very selfish. And why in God's green earth would he be here all the time when he doesn't live here? So I assume my father's life cannot be good, right? My husband says, well, maybe he met a woman. I said, I hope not. And the only reason I hope not is this. My mother, and I've talked about the will, I'm not going to get too deep into it, but she made sure that I heard that my ex is the executor of the will, my ex-husband, okay? My ex-husband is the executor. Now, that doesn't mean anything, but I'm sure they left him something. But the house would go to my daughter. I'm afraid that my dad meets some woman who forces him to change the will, and then my daughter loses out. That's not what I want, okay? I don't want my daughter to lose out because my dad is being played, and he is very easily manipulated and played. And if I found out that there is another woman involved with him, oh my God, even worse, right? Like, I want nothing to do with him, but, you know, good for him if that's the case. I don't think so. I honestly don't. All right, so I'm going to end it there. This has been a long podcast, but as you can see, some of us have two toxic parents. Some of us were just that lucky. Sometimes I wonder if, you know, I was an evil warlord in a past life, and this is my, you know, karma, is having been born to these two people. And having to break the chains, but hopefully the next, if there is such a thing as, you know, several lives, you know, you're reborn. I don't know what of the theories of life is the true one, because me having a conviction like that would be very, you know, at the height of hubris of me to say that. You know, oh, I know that this is what happened. I'm very open to different ideas. And, you know, in my mind is I will find out when it happens, right? When I die, I'll find out if I'm going to reincarnate, or if you just die and that's it, or if you go to a heaven or a hell. I don't know. Anyhow. So... I just, you know, some of us were lucky enough to have two toxic parents, right? Not just one. And the problem is that we don't have the capacity to deal with or understand that they were both toxic at the same time, because we would go crazy. I mean, we would lose our minds. We have to do it one at a time. So my mother was first. She's gone. That's over. Now it's my father. And having to realize that, my ex-husband, they both came, their toxicity came to me at the same time. I had to process both of them at the same time. But it was different, right? My therapist, whom I couldn't be more thankful, she was the one who referred me to the EMDR therapist. Was wonderful, and she was the one who told me, you don't have to talk to your ex anymore. Your daughter is an adult, and you don't have any reason to talk to him unless there's an emergency, and I don't. That's when I went no contact with him. The therapist I had before her, she called me stubborn because I was trying to explain to her that my ex was doing things on purpose. Right, to bother me, it doesn't matter what happened, but believe me, he did something that was on purpose. And anyway, not to get too much off track, I am going to end it there. But yeah, we cannot process both parents at the same time because that's too much. We want to believe that one of them was good. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes, you know, some of you only had one parent, right? And I'm sorry. And I'm right there with you. I might as well have had one parent because he didn't defend me. He didn't help me. He never stood up for me. He helped her. So I would have been better off without him, I think, sometimes, if he had just disappeared too. Because then, at least in my mind, I could have... I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, I love you guys so much. I hope this was helpful in some way that you could relate to having two toxic parents. And until next time, I promise there's a next time. Until next time.